Hi everyone, this is Tony Mitra, an Indo-Canadian from the Vancouver area. Here is a recorded conversation of April 18, 2013 between myself and Mr. Rajesh Krishnan of Greenpeace India on the situation with GMO. So what is your view? I have a feeling that India is, in spite of all the problem, is doing it better than North America because of the civil society.
Yeah, to an extent that's true, Tony. And thanks to vibrant a movement for sustainable agriculture, which has grown over the last decade or so, and thanks to a very strong anti-GM movement, at least formal approvals of GM crops have been, other than BT cotton, have been stalled for the time being. There are field trials which the government has permitted, but even that is going slow because now state governments have started actively opposing field trials in their respective states. So there is a situation where there is a strong debate on the issue in this country, because of which the EC and fast approval of any kinds of environmental release of GM crops, be it for field trials or for commercialization, have been stopped for the time being.
Rajesh, for the listeners, can you please explain very briefly who you are and how you are with Greenpeace? What exactly is your level of involvement in this issue?
My name is Rajesh Krishnan. I have been working with Greenpeace India for the last 9 years, and of that 8 years in the sustainable agriculture campaign as a campaigner. And my focus area is the issue of genetically modified crops. In India, Greenpeace, and across the globe also, Greenpeace works towards shifting a paradigm of agriculture from the industry-controlled, input-intensive, resource destructive model of agriculture into a sustainable model of agriculture which practices ecological farming and where natural resources are conserved and those involved in the farm livelihoods are protected. So that's what I've been doing for the last 8 years.
Oh, wonderful. And did you during your course did you also have to visit nearby countries with Greenpeace on similar issues or fact-finding or anything?
In our region, there is a Greenpeace India office. There is one in China, and then there is actually East Asia, and then there is a Southeast Asian office. So my work has mostly been focused on India. I haven't visited other nearby countries other than for meetings. Fact findings in other countries is something I have done.
Now, I have a question for you. Here in the West, at least in North America, I hear this comment from people that with regard to BT cotton and farmer suicide and all that, that India has always been having farmers committing suicide for all kinds of regrettable reasons, but it's not necessarily related to GMO or BT cotton. Can you throw some light on this?
To say that farmer suicides have not been aggravated by GM crops would be like closing your eye and calling it darkness. If you look at the trend of farm suicides in the country, you realize that it's post the liberalization times, which is post 1990s, when the market of opening and all those things, reforms started, that the numbers of farm suicides have seriously increased. And over the last decade, you see that it has reached 2.5 lakh farmers committing suicide. And that's a huge number and cannot be wished away. And if you look at the link of that to GM crops, the first thing you notice is that the farm suicides in the cotton belt have also coincided with the increased uptake of intensive models of farming, with hybrid seeds and the subsequent use of fertilizers, need for irrigation, I mean intensive irrigation, and because of hybrid seeds and fertilizers, pest attacks are also increased. So there is that treadmill that farmers have been forced into. And now GM, what BT Cotton has done is that it has added the speed of that treadmill and not letting farmers get out of that treadmill. And in the last 10 years or 11 years of BT Cotton, you see that the farm suicides have not come down, especially in the cotton belts of the country. And then you also realize that the input usage, the input costs have increased with the increased usage of BT cotton seeds. It starts with the seed costs. Then you also see that with BT cotton, increased BT cotton adoption, pesticide usage has increased. Contrary to what the industry and the developers of GM crops say, BT cotton has not reduced pesticide usage and in fact had led to increased pesticide usage. So here again, adding to the input costs. Then there is the fertilizer costs, greater need of irrigation thanks to hybrid BT crops. So all that has led to increased distress for the farmer. Then added to that is also the market failure. So I wouldn't say that it's solely because of BT cotton that farmer suicides are happening, but BT cotton has greatly contributed to it and continues to contribute to it.
And how about this this issue of increased use of pesticides and its harmful effects in the soil, and the report that the soil goes dead and it kills all kinds of organisms and not just pests, and eventually the soil goes dead and it requires more and more fertilizer, more and more intensive input, more and more cost to raise the same amount of crop, and also it's supposed to add to the ecological devastation through its runoff water or through the ill health coming from the farmers getting exposed to this pesticides. Can you talk something about that?
Well, on the what you said is quite right. On increased pesticide usage, it has a serious impact on the entire biodiversity in the field, which includes destruction of friendly insects, which keeps the pest balance in the field, thereby actually helping the farmer to reduce pesticide or pest management practices. Then there's the issue of soil microbes being killed, impacted, whereby the nutrients in the soil is reduced, and thereby making the soil infertile, and thereby leading to more need of external inputs to be added into the soil. So increased pesticide usage definitely creates all those issues also. Apart from that, with BT cotton, there are also studies. In India, there have been studies, and I've seen, and I also know that there are studies from other parts of the world as well, that exudates from BT cotton also has an impact on the microbial life in the soil. So it's not just pesticide usage because of BT cotton. It's BT cotton plant itself, which is also leading to soil nutrient issues.
Because of the toxin in the plant?
Yeah, and the BT toxin and the exudates from the plant, which has BT toxin, is having an impact on the microbes in the soil.
Oh, I see. And BT plants being eaten by other animals is having problems with the animals themselves. Is that right?
Yeah, there have been a lot of instances of reports coming on cattle and especially sheep and goat deaths because of grazing on BT cotton stubbles. There was this case in Andhra Pradesh which was taken up by the local sheep herders, where they realized that hundreds of their sheep were dying after grazing on BT cotton fields. They took it up to the state veterinary and animal husbandry department, and finally the animal husbandry department gave a notice saying that people should not graze their sheep on BT cotton fields. But then, surprisingly, the regulatory body, the Genetic Engineering Appraisal Committee in India, gave a clean chit to BT cotton, saying that it's not because of BT cotton. Even after several studies showing that, you know, you can't inconclusively or you can't conclusively say that BT cotton is not a culprit. So that remains a serious issue, and as of now, it remains inconclusive also whether BT cotton has a role in that or not.
Yeah, well, there is also this perception that the regulatory authority is very biased and pro-GMO. What do you say?
Yeah. The regulatory system in this country, unfortunately, has been taking a promotional approach towards GMOs rather than the precautionary approach that you know they should take if they are taking a scientific approach towards GMOs.
So, is this going to become an election issue next year?
Yeah, I mean, if you see, it has always been an election issue. Political parties have milked this to the maximum, to their maximum benefit. And you'll see soaps coming just a year before the election. Like before the last national elections, there was a farm loan waiver, which the Congress government did. And it said that that helped quite a lot in, you know, in getting votes and coming back to power for the Congress. So they keep, this is of course an important issue, and they know that, but what they do is mere eye wash, and then they come up with all these kinds of soaps which don't have a long-lasting impact, or which doesn't create a real solution for the distress in the agriculture sector in this country.
So, is India planning to kind of push small farmers out of business and so that big agribusiness can take over the job, or what? I mean, where are these millions of farmers going to go?
Actually, Tony, you'll be surprised to hear that that's not a covert thing that the government is doing, that they are doing it overtly. In fact, the finance minister in one of his earlier budget speeches had said that we need to move 10% of our agriculture population out of agriculture. So that is the focus of the government. And they are doing that by further adding to the distress of farmers so that farmers themselves leave agriculture. And who leave agriculture is the small and marginal farmers. So, well, for us who have been working on the farm issues in this country, it is not a surprise that government continues to bring in policies to push out farmers, small and marginal farmers, out of farming, and then help larger, I mean, big companies, corporates, to get into contract farming, consolidate land, and, you know, control large parts of agriculture land in this country. So that is a set policy of the government.
That's all fine, but what's going to happen to the farmers? I mean, unlike North America, you have hundreds of millions of people connected to the farming lifestyle, and India is not having millions of jobs available for them in some other sectors. So what are all these people going to do?
Well, they will end up in slums in the city, and that's what we have seen. Because of this continuing distress in agriculture, people have been migrating out of countryside. And where do they land up? They land up in cities, and cities, there is no one waiting with plush jobs and lifestyles for them. They all end up in slums in the cities. They continue to have a distressed life in cities. So, and there are also interesting studies which shows that as long as there is some farm holding for a person, his food security is assured. The moment he loses any land or his farm, his food security comes down drastically. So, I mean, it's going back to worse for the farmers in the country.
That sounds so terrible. I mean, is there going to be an election backlash or an uprising in the countryside or what?
Well, elections in this country always surprise me and many, because the reason why one votes for a particular party or an individual, could be because of various reasons. While this has been a major issue, this has not created that kind of a push because of which political parties had to think of long-lasting solutions. That revolution is simmering. It's yet to happen, and I'm sure if things go on in this way, it would happen, and then political parties will have to think of long-term solutions. Yeah. So, but at the same time, there has also been a very active civil society which has been working in the rural side and with the policymakers to kind of push them to start thinking in the direction of long-term solutions for agriculture, and that has also helped to kind of cushion this situation. While I don't know whether one can call it a revolution, but I think there is an evolution happening of a stronger movement towards ecological farming.
And then there is this moratorium on against introduction of any further GM crops in India, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. The moratorium actually was on BT Brinjal, but that has kind of blocked the entry of any other GM food crops also. So it's true that thanks to the active debate in this country, there is a stoppage of not just commercialization of GM crops, but even field trials of GM crops.
Okay, I have another question for you. While the federal government is perhaps promoting field trials of GM crops, how is it that provinces are able to block it? And is it a federal issue or a provincial issue or what?
Yeah, if you go by our constitution, agriculture is a federal subject, as in it falls under the powers or the authority of the state government. So because of which state governments can say no to such kind of field trials, and that's what state governments have been using also. And because of growing opposition of state government, finally the central government had to come up with a rule that if field trials have to happen, then the applicants need to get a no objection certificate from the respective state governments before doing the field trial. And that rule came into effect from 2011 March, and that has been stopping a lot of field trials from happening across country.
Oh, I see. So, is this a new law enacted in 2011 that gives the provinces kind of a veto power to stop even field trials of GMO crops?
No, that's not a new law. It's an order that the then Minister of Environment and Forest, Jairam Ramesh, put in effect. It was after state governments wrote to him saying that field trials are being held in their states without their permission. So when he started getting a lot of opposition from state governments, he came up with an order saying that henceforth states need to be given a choice to say yes or no to a field trial before field trials happen there. So it's an order by the environment minister. Actually, if you look at the GM regulation in India, you don't have a statutory body. There has been no law passed in the parliament on regulation of GMOs in our country. So the regulation of GMOs happened under a broader environmental act called as Environmental Protection Act. And because of which, time and again, Poor is a minister of the of the time, and Poor is in GEAC, the Genetic Engineering Appraisal Committee. They keep changing the rules, and that's something that has been challenged by a lot of civil society. In fact, a lot of us in the civil society now feel that it is high time that India has a statutory rule on regulation of GMOs. And the mandate of such a law should be safeguarding of biosafety from open releases of GMOs. And that's something that we are pushing at this moment.
This biodiversity safety, India already has passed a Biological Diversity Preservation Act. Correct or not?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm talking of Biosafety Protection Authority, Biosafety Protection Regime. And this is specifically with regard to GMOs. For example, there are countries like Norway who has a Gene Technology Act, which has a main mandate of protecting biosafety. And then there are many other countries who have such kind of laws. So we are saying that India should also have law passed in the parliament, which says so. In fact, a parliamentary standing committee on agriculture, which dealt with the issue of GM crops, had come up with this recommendation, saying that it's high time that the country has a biosafety protection regime instead of a biotech regulatory regime that we have.
I see. So given the relative success that the civil society has achieved in blocking this onslaught from GMO, do you feel reasonably hopeful that India will be able to eventually get rid of this clearly unsustainable agribusiness that doesn't solve anything except make a lot of money for corporations? Do you think India is going to be past it very soon?
I don't think at this point, looking at the way things are happening in this country, I'm not sure whether if there is not enough pressure, we'll ever have a happily ever after kind of a situation. There is huge pressure on the government from the business lobby to move our agriculture into corporate controlled input intensive model of agriculture, like in the West, and bringing things like GMOs and all, which benefits the industry. So it won't be that easy to think that things will be all right and will remain so, if not for a constant public campaign and pressure on the policymakers. But there are also glimmers of hope, even in the policy making circle. There are people who are sensitive, who do understand the ground situation, and who knows where solutions lie. So there are glimmers of hope, but I will not say that it will happen on its own. It needs a huge involvement by all in this country.
Do you think there is a kind of a bias in the minds of the educated upper middle class society that technology is always good and science is always good, and whoever is promoting a GMO, they are doing it for the good and it's a good idea, and then whoever is opposing it is kind of a backdated dinosaurian anti-science, anti-progress, and a weirdo, and so on. Do you think so?
Yeah, I mean, that's quite true to a large extent. It's also thanks to the kind of education model that we have, where anything traditional knowledge is not valued at all. It starts from there, and I think that it's not just limited to the upwardly mobile upper middle class people. It's kind of percolating to every layer of the society, and that's a serious threat. And you also rightly said that anyone questioning a technology, a particular or maybe a particular tool of a technology, is then immediately painted as anti-technologists, anti-science, anti-development Luddites. So there is that perception that is being built. And actually, I would say that the developers of technology, the industry, has been quite successful in developing kind of pushing that propaganda also, that anyone challenging a technology or anyone challenging a particular tool of a technology should immediately be branded as anti-development, anti-science, and all those things. So there is a need to kind of redefine what is development, redefine, or not redefine, actually bring back the real original definition of science and make that clear distinction between what is science and what is technology. For instance, in this case of GMOs, a lot of us in the civil society who have been opposing open releases of genetically modified organisms into the environment are very clear that we are not against a platform technology. In this case, genetic engineering is a platform technology. I mean, and there is science behind it, and it's in an evolving state. And we say that we should take a scientific approach towards it. And since there is enough evidence to say that there are negative impacts to human health, environment, socioeconomic aspects, and so on and so forth, we need to stop the environmental releases of GMOs. That's precisely what people are saying. But then the other side doesn't want to get into those kind of nuances. The moment you are seen asking for a precautionary approach towards GMOs, you are immediately painted as anti-technology. And that is the myth that they want to push around, that anyone opposing their products are anti-technologies, anti-science, anti-development, and all those things. At the same time, we keep saying that there has to be responsible biotechnology, there has to be a responsible technology, there has to be appropriate technologies for development. When you talk of biotechnologies, there are even farmyard biotechnologies in India and other parts of the world as well. And one is not opposed to those kind of technologies. One is saying that risky technologies like GMOs need to be taken with precaution.
I see. That's very good. And we covered a lot of ground today. Time is also running out. Is there anything else you would like to add, Rajesh?
Yeah, but I just want to point to an interesting, the way things have been developing in our country, from a place where there was absolutely no debate, no information on GMOs, to a place where you have a very vibrant debate on GMOs, and where the various sections of the society has now come out and has started taking part in this debate. The latest being the scientific community. There's a strong scientific community now in India who's kind of taking up this GM issue and questioning the mindless way in which government is promoting them. In fact, there was this whole debate around how GM is an answer to food security. The agriculture minister, Sharad Pawar, had been going around the town and drumming around saying that if India doesn't bring in GM crops, then our food security is under threat. And what we saw was amazing, where scientific community came out in large numbers, challenging that argument and pointing to scientific facts on how food security, how GM crops are not a silver bullet for food security. And we also saw other civil society groups like the Strong Right to Food campaign in this country, the farmer unions in this country, etc., coming out and challenging that argument. So it's quite interesting to see the way this debate around GM crops has evolved in this country from a point where it was almost nil to a point where various sections of the society have been taking up this issue from various angles and all asking for a precautionary approach towards GMO and for stopping open releases of GMOs in the country.